Welcome to the Center for Financial Inclusion's podcast series. This is Kelly Mesa, and I'm the Web and Publications Manager at the Center for Financial Inclusion at Axion International. And I'm here today with two special guests, Elizabeth Ryan, who's the Managing Director here at the Center for Financial Inclusion, and Kate McKee, who's the Senior Advisor at CGAP, the consultative group to assist the poor. Beth and Kate are really the two people who have created a vision for microfinance providers around the world to come together and focus on this important issue of consumer protection. This vision has evolved into the new Campaign for Client Protection, which is a worldwide initiative to unite the microfinance community to develop and implement standards for the appropriate treatment of low-income clients based on six principles. And Beth, I'll start with you. The campaign is based on these six principles, and you've said you wanted to see good consumer practice, as exemplified by the principles, really become a part of the DNA of the industry. What do you mean by that?
Well, Kelly, this is something I really feel passionate about. I feel that the microfinance industry has always been about making clients' lives better and offering services that make their lives better. And I think that as we see consumer protection issues arising, we realize that sometimes financial services can do harm. And we need to recognize that fact and embrace the kinds of principles that avoid harm as much as possible. I think the industry actually has a very good track record on this score. And what we're doing by saying that we want it to become part of the DNA of the industry is really talking about raising awareness and making these good practices really an upfront part of the way the industry presents itself and the way the industry operates from day to day. One other aspect of this, I think, is that it's really the responsibility of everyone working in microfinance to uphold consumer protection principles. And when I say use the phrase DNA, it means part of something that everyone considers to be part and parcel of being a microfinance professional.
And Kate, this isn't a very new concept as I understand it, consumer protection and microfinance. What has been happening around the topic in the industry over the last few years?
Well, Kelly, you're right. And Beth and I come to this work on the campaign with a lot of humility. First of all, I'd want to really stress that we are building very much on the work that other pioneers have been doing to articulate how is it that microfinance in its policies, in its practices, in its people would really embody the best principles of protecting clients and ensuring that they benefit from access to finance rather than being harmed by it. This campaign builds on a strong foundation of work that's largely been led by providers, by practitioners, by national associations, international networks that have, over the course of the last, say, 5-7 years, have articulated what has now been distilled into these six core client protection principles. So they've been working, membership organizations, individual MFIs, networks have been working to figure out what do we need to do to be sure that we're treating our clients well and we're taking reasonable steps to be sure that they benefit from the services that we're offering. And so some of the organizations that have been most active in this have been, for example, the SEEP Network, which had a very active group of its members, and then in turn the retail MFIs that were their members and affiliates that have been working to articulate a pro-consumer code of conduct. If we look at the work that some of the national associations have done in Uganda, in India, in Mexico, around the world, to articulate the principles and what would be some of the policies, you know, that definitely is a strong part of what we're building on. And Beth may want to comment, because I know you were involved, Beth, in this work directly at Axion International and at the Microfinance Network.
Yeah, a couple years ago when I was working with the Axion Network and the Microfinance Network to come up with a code of principles, it turned out to be really easy to get consensus around them, and that was really a great place to start from. It was easy to get agreement. But what was hard, and what we realized after we had this successful adoption of a code of conduct, was that it was hard to determine exactly how you implemented this code.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of got stuck a couple of years ago. We had great success with the principles, but didn't know where to go from here. So we're really trying to pick that question up where we left it a couple of years ago and move it forward now.
And the time seems really right now. I mean, I think there's a lot more awareness about these issues. In a way, the work 5 years ago was maybe too far ahead of its time, and now it's a lot more obvious why it's important for the microfinance industry to articulate what standards it's going to hold itself to. And I should probably mention also that there's been a lot more work on consumer protection policy and regulation in recent years. So that topic was almost completely off the agenda of financial sector policy in developing countries until recently, but now there's a lot more awareness.
So it sounds like it's particularly timely right now with what's been happening in the housing market in the United States and then the economic turmoil that's been seen around the world. What do you think about that?
Well, it's clear that the subprime mortgage crisis put client protection issues right at the very top of the agenda. And I think it scared everyone around the world to see that a failure of consumer protection really had tremendous ripple effects. It's rippling around the entire world economy now.
Yeah, it's clear that awareness is much higher now about how consumer protection is important, not just to make sure that people who are using the loan products in this case don't get harmed, but that it also can have implications for the whole stability of the financial system and for other factors that's kind of rippled out across the global economy. You know, if we use that old metric of how many times does a phrase appear, if you do a Google search, how many pages of references does it turn up, and we were to stick in responsible finance, I bet 2 years ago it would come up, you know, maybe a dozen times, and now it's thousands. This is a concept that's really at the core of discussions about how the global financial system gets back on track. So I think it definitely gives an urgency to our sector, in part because some of the policy approaches that might be adopted could be harmful to access to finance.
Another factor that is keeping it at the top of the agenda is the recognition of the importance of microfinance, the importance to microfinance of its reputation as a pro-client endeavor. What we see with the collapse of the subprime market is how vulnerable the industry, the financial industry, is to loss of reputation. And for microfinance, what we want to accomplish with microfinance is to maintain its really positive reputation that it does have, and to solidify that reputation in a way that is not only really solid for microfinance, but influences the practice by other institutions as well.
I think one of the points you're raising, Beth, also is, you know, let's be honest, with competition picking up in a number of microfinance markets, including from other kinds of financial institutions and other kinds of providers, there can be a temptation to cut corners, and for some good reasons, you know, to be efficient, to be able to keep your prices low, to keep repayment high when you're, despite the fact that clients may have a lot more options than they used to have. So there are a lot of pressures that come with competition that, unless they're very consciously addressed with microfinance policies and practices, can lead to less than ideal outcomes for clients.
And probably this is most acute in the area of overlending in the face of competition involving multiple providers all serving the same target clients, especially in a situation where credit bureaus are not well developed, and so the information sharing about who's got what kinds of loans outstanding is not available.
And it can then ripple through to other kinds of practices like collection practices that are a bit too aggressive and not basically fair to the client when overlending has occurred.
I want to kind of touch on the campaign structure itself. There's a number of collaborators that have come together to support this campaign. There's a newly named steering committee that has individuals from around the world who are leaders in their own countries and in their own sectors. I was wondering if you could talk about the roles that CGAP and the center are taking in the campaign and what you're focusing on, how you're working together.
CGAP and the Center for Financial Inclusion have been working very closely together from the very beginning of this, as we were first conceptualizing what the campaign could be back 9 months ago in the summer of 2008. And at that point, we really agreed that we would focus on different areas, that we would work closely together to create a unified campaign for the industry or with the industry, but each organization focusing on a different segment of the industry. So the center has been focused more on reaching out to the practitioners, to the MFIs, and to networks and associations of MFIs. CGAP is taking more of the leading role working with investors and working with the donor community. Kate, do you want to talk a little more about that?
Yeah, and I think we are very grateful that the Center for Financial Inclusion is taking the lead on basically providing the secretariat for the campaign and raising the resources, dedicating the staff to kind of create the glue that will hold it all together. Then, as Beth mentioned, we have this nice division of labor that kind of speaks to where each of us has our deepest expertise and ties with the industry. So as we've thought about this dilemma that Beth raised earlier on about the principles are out there, and actually it was pretty easy to sit down, look at all these codes of conduct, distill these six principles. That was not very hard to do, to see the kinds of things that came up from Ghana to Mexico to India, whether we're talking about credit unions or microfinance institutions or microfinance banks. So there was a lot of consensus at the level of principles. But as Beth mentioned, the issue was, where do you go next? And what are the incentives, really, for providers to take what are sometimes difficult steps in terms of making sure you're fully transparent about your pricing when maybe your competitors are not, to make sure that you're really not going over the line in terms of your collections practices when microfinance depends so much on very focused follow-up whenever there's a late payment. So one of the things we've been trying to do is increase the incentives and the rewards for providers that choose to really embody these principles in their policies and practices. And clearly, if donors and investors are aware of the issues and are looking for that as they go out into the microfinance market and seek partners to work with, that's going to help a lot. If we're trying to increase incentives for providers to do what's not always so easy to do, then clearly it's helpful if their funders, their donors and investors are aware of the steps that they're taking, are encouraging them to take those steps, and over time are rewarding the microfinance providers that are stronger on client protection than those that have paid less attention to these issues. So CGAP is working with the investor community and with funders to identify things that they can do. And to date, we have 50 of the largest investors and fund managers that have endorsed the principles and are working to incorporate them into their practices and their investment process. So this doesn't mean that investors are improving their client protection. It means that they are making sure in their due diligence and their screening and their reporting requirements and their monitoring to engage with the partner MFIs around the MFIs' client protection practices and find ways to strengthen them. One more piece of the puzzle is policy and regulatory work, and CGAP is also taking the lead on that. I think there's a growing recognition across the industry that good regulation in this area can actually protect the good guys providers as well as customers. And so there's a growing acceptance of the idea that some regulation, as long as it's appropriate to microfinance, might actually be helpful. And we're trying to figure out what that might be.
Now, the steering committee has met already once, and there's a number of conversations over the last 9 months. What's kind of coming out as some of the biggest challenges for the campaign over these next few months and the next year?
Well, I'll tell you what makes me nervous. I'm just going to answer this in a personal way. Is about every day I go to the campaign website and I look to see how many endorsers there are. And I have to say, with new endorsers every day, I'm thinking, gosh, you know, we need to be sure that we're actually reaching out to each of those organizations and engaging with them around what endorsement means. I think there's a real risk that it's easy to endorse and it's hard to implement, so lots of organizations are going to want to endorse, and we'll lose our credibility if it doesn't really mean something. So that's what keeps me awake at night, is to be sure that we're taking all the steps we can to try to stay a bit ahead of the wave of awareness and enthusiasm and actually have real practical steps to propose to all the different stakeholders, things they can do to make client protection meaningful in their own organization.
So that means we need to develop tools. And for me, that's the biggest keep me up at night question, is how are we going to develop tools that are really practical and useful for MFIs to help them implement the principles. And I just hear a huge hunger for those kinds of tools. So we're in the process of developing a list of tools that's trying to understand what tools really are needed and what would be most useful. Clearly the first thing that we will be making available will be a self-assessment tool that will help MFIs to diagnose how well they're doing in practice on implementing the principles. And there we begin to deepen the knowledge about how to translate the principles into practice.
So when you say tools, Beth, I mean, you're thinking about the kinds of things that are coming out of the Beyond Codes project, where MFIs have looked deeply at their own policies and practices, and they've said, okay, so we have a staff ethics policy, but is it really being built into our training enough? Do we monitor it? You know, what's the consequence of not following the policy for a staff member? Are our credit policies really as sensitive as they need to be to dangers of over-indebtedness and assessing client ability to repay? Is this the kind of thing you mean by tools?
Yes. One set of tools would be very broad and helping to diagnose where the weak areas are. That's really the first tool that we'd like to come out with. But then when you get to the next stage, you need to go deeper in each of the six principles, and exactly some of those things would be what those tools would cover. Another example that's come up recently was, what does a good grievance redress process look like? Mm-hmm. A lot of it would be just making available examples of good practice that we glean from other institutions. And those tools need to be turned into both suggested policies, and they need to turn into training materials that can be used with staff and things of that sort. So that's what tools.
Yeah, I know when I talk to investors that they're extremely keen to be able to point their partner MFIs to examples of other MFIs, you know, what's considered good practice or at least minimum standards. And so I think you're right that there's a real hunger
for
that practical information.
Yeah. We're getting inquiries every day about, so how do we do this? How do we do that? And I want to be able to respond to those with really good feedback.
Let me ask one last question, which is, in about 3 years, looking back on the campaign, what's going to make you feel like this was really all worthwhile and that they've had a really successful time?
Well, for me, I can think of two things that I'd really like to be able to see. One is that I'd like to be able to, in 3 years, look around the world at the microfinance industry and be confident that clients are not getting in trouble by borrowing too much, that really the industry has found ways to restrain overlending. Because I think that's the most important of the client protection issues, or the most the one in which the industry is the most vulnerable at this point. So that's one side. I could also say I want to see a day in which people from the microfinance industry are called in as expert witnesses to the mainstream to give advice on how to implement client protection principles in the financial sector.
Yeah, I want to just pick up on this last point, because I think part of my vision for success looking out 3 years is that our sector be perceived as having really been proactive and having developed some exemplary practices and processes and built awareness quickly across a large and diverse sector around the world. And something else that would make me feel that we were making progress is if asking these questions stimulates a whole lot of innovations that actually make the products better, that improve the quality of microfinance services. And I believe really strongly this is going to make microfinance providers stronger and more competitive in their markets if we can really be improving the value proposition for clients.
Thank you so much, Kate and Beth, for being here. Again, this was Elizabeth Ryan of the Center for Financial Inclusion and Kate McKee from CGAP. And for our listeners to learn more about the campaign for client protection and to learn about the principles and also to endorse, because you can endorse on behalf of your organization or as an individual in support of the principles, please visit the website, which is www.campaignforclientprotection.org. And to learn more about the Center for Financial Inclusion, you can visit our website at www.centerforfinancialinclusion.org.